Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. I'm sure everybody had a good night's sleep. It was quite wonderful to have that extra hour, wasn't it? To be honest, I had completely forgotten. And all of a sudden, Angie told me this morning, no, it's not. I figured 7 o'clock, it's 6 o'clock. What a gift, you know? We just play with time, and all of a sudden, you know, but anyhow, so nice having that extra hour. For those of you who this is your first time, this is now going to be a Dharma talk. After meditation, we give a Dharma talk. It is being live streamed for members of the Florida Community Mindfulness who live outside of Tampa, and it's being recorded for playback. Oh, and also, for those of you who are new to meditation or new to mindfulness, we do have an introduction, four-week introduction to meditation and mindfulness class. I think we do them 6 times a year, and we seem to be doing them more and more. So please check our website for when the next one is being offered. So today I want to continue the various teachings I've given over the past year on these mind trainings. I won't go into them other than saying, for those of you who aren't familiar with them, these are a kind of a brilliant piece of Dharma, Buddhist Dharma literature. They come from India. And they went to Tibet, where they were very much loved and practiced, and now they are spreading about the world. But they are these 59 very pithy slogans that really hit to really all the major points of spiritual practice, in this case, Dharma practice, Buddhist practice, in a very incisive way, direct way, and yet very practical way. So it's sort of like all these teachings can be understood easily and applied. There are 59 of them. And they fundamentally have to do with what in Buddhism, it's a Sanskrit word called bodhicitta, which is the awakened mind. Some of it has to do with how one cultivates at the deepest level the awakened mind, but really most of it is really about how one lives it. So it's very practical. It's sort of like these great beings took their realization and their practice and their mind states and kind of just wrote it out for us like a little cheat sheet. So it's very beneficial. This morning, and we'll see how far I get. I believe I'm teaching next week too, so we'll see how far we get. And again, for those of you who are interested in Tibet, they're called mind trainings in Tibetan. They're called Lojong. And at this point, there are many books with commentaries on them and translations. This is called The Great Path of Awakening. It's a small book. And it has commentaries of this 19th century Buddhist master, very small, but there are more modern commentaries, one by an American, Alan Wallace, brings in a little more modern psychology and science, for those of you who like that. Trela Grimpoche, a modern Tibetan teacher, has a great commentary on it. And when I say commentary, it means they go verse by verse and then interpret it, how to practice it. So what I want to begin with today is slogan 44, which says, again, this is how they go. Learn the 3 difficult points. So you see how why commentary is needed? You might each of us here may have our own interpretation of what, you know, the 3 difficult points in this life are. Is that clear? So, again, they're simple, but it's good to have commentary because a lot of them are like that. Practice the 5 this and do the 3 this. And, you know, anyhow, you'll see. So the commentary is needed. So in the commentary, we learn that we learn what these three difficult points are. And again, even this is a teaching that's, you know, 1500 years old or whatever, it's still totally relevant to us today. So what are these three difficult points? The first one is the difficulty to recognize and identify disturbing emotions. The second difficult point is to stop them and to take immediately corrective action when they've arisen. And the third difficult point is to then be decisive for the rest of our life in maintaining our commitment not to cultivate and even to eliminate them in our life. Okay? So does everybody understand this is difficult? Yeah, okay. But they are key, and I think they speak to all of us, whether we've just walked in here today or more recently, and this is all brand new, or whether we have been around for years, this is a key point of practice, right? So many people misinterpret spirituality and meditation as, yeah, I know all about the afflictive, disturbing emotions. Tell me how I can get away from them, right? You know, how can I get rid of them? But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. You know, we have to transform them. And it's in that process of transforming them that we actually change. So the first difficulty is, and this is where sort of what we were doing this morning is key, is to recognize and to identify these disturbing emotions, right? So for most ordinary people, we recognize and our disturbing emotions sort of after we've had them and they've been running for hours or days or we've acted out, right? At some point we go, oh, I've been lost in this drama or I've been lost in this disturbing emotion. Oftentimes because we see the result of it. You know, we're all bent out of shape. You know, our mind is all bent out of shape. We've said and done things that are harmful to ourselves and others. You see, that's usually when we identify it, right? Which again is not very skillful or helpful, is it? So the first thing is we need to learn to identify an afflictive, a difficult emotion when they are arising. Is that easy? No. Because we are so identified with them and we are so easily swept by the current, their current, right? That we, you know, that moment of awareness is lost to us. Is that clear? I mean, we all know that. So what did we learn this morning? You know, how can I train my mind to be present to what is going on right now? Right? And in a very simple way, we were doing that. We were present to our bodies. We were present to our minds, right? And was that easy? No, for many people, right? It flickers all about. So this is why the meditation practice is so key. Right? And again, you don't have to be a great meditator. Don't think you have to, rise to the heights of great meditators. But there has to be some degree of self-awareness of what's going on in my body and mind, right? So when irritation or anger, when sadness or fear or anxiety or jealousy or envy, or you know the list, arise in my mind, I'm aware of it, right? Again, we know we have that capability because we are very good at noticing those things in other people, right? So don't say we don't have that ability. We have that ability, and many of us are very good at it, right? We notice everybody's afflictive emotions and stuff, and we're right on it. Is that clear? So we know how to do it. We just don't know how to do it for who? for ourselves, right? So this, you know, again, this is, it's not, again, because we don't have this ability. We have this ability, right? But we are untrained. Our minds are untrained to turn the light of awareness, of mindfulness, on what's arising within our own mind. It is not that hard, right? But there has to be this kind of willingness to be present and aware of what's arising within me. Is that clear? Okay. So that's number one. I mean, if the light's not on and it's dark, you know, we cannot see what's there. Okay. So mindfulness is just turning on the light. Now, the second part of that is, you know, if we're going to turn this around, is we know we need criteria, right? So what is it that, you know, what is an afflictive emotion? What is a disturbing emotion? And what isn't? I mean, not all emotions are afflictive. Not all emotions are disturbing, right? I mean, happiness, right? Calmness, patience, generous mind. You know what I mean? There are lots of mind states that are quite positive. And they really support a lot of goodness in our life. They don't disturb us. They don't disturb the peace of the mind. And they don't push us into acting unskillfully. Is that clear? So each of us need our own internal criteria that not only are we aware of what's arising within us, but we can identify. Identify means label, you know. I am aware there is anger arising in me. And I know it's afflictive. Right? I know that if I run with it, you know, no good is going to come. I know that I'm in a worrying mind state, or I'm in an obsessive mind state, or, you know what I'm saying? All those mind states, we have to be able to be aware of them and simply in the beginning, label them. I mean, is that clear? I mean, it's very simple. So, you know, this is actually simple. So don't complicate it by reading too much and thinking too much and overthinking. You know, we need to develop this capacity to be self-aware of what's arising in our body, mind, and we need to just have a very simple criteria of wholesome versus unwholesome. Right. Are there wholesome people in your life? Everybody was wholesome people. Raise your hand. Okay. Anybody have any unwholesome people in their life, personal life, work life, right? Okay. You can you see? You have criteria. You can tell a wholesome person from an unwholesome person. Right? But there is a gray area. Is that what you're going to do? Yeah, there is a gray area. But let's get the big one first, okay? Okay, yeah, there's a gray area. It's not always that clear. But I think if we have criteria and we're consistent, we will see. Because we will see the effect it has on us. Okay. Wholesome emotions, wholesome mind state have a positive effect on us and allow us to go into the world in a positive and wholesome way. Afflictive mind states, disturbing mind states disturb the peace of our mind. They disturb our well-being. Right? Has anybody ever had a mind state that sort of kept you up at night, you know, kind of prevented you from falling asleep or woken you up in the middle of the night? Is it a wholesome mind state that's doing that? Just try to remember that. You might have had one last night. Is it a wholesome mind? You see, it's obvious. No, it's unwholesome because it disturbs the mind. Okay. Just pay attention. You'll see. Again, it's not often clear, but you will, you know, we have to be objective. We have to have objective criteria. And it's personal. Right? I mean, something that disturbs this person may not be so disturbing to that person. You know, we all have our personal kind of unfolding in this life. Right? In the same way with people. Right? You know, you may have somebody who's you think is very afflictive in your life, right? Somebody else might think they're wonderful. Is that true? Yeah, and vice versa. You know. So we have to understand that we have to know ourselves. Right? And again, this is not like objective criteria saying, you know, all my assessments of the world and the people in it, wholesome and unwholesome, are all totally correct. No, they're all very personal. But at least we need to understand, you know, that we have criteria. But again, yeah, they can be modified. Okay. But again, the result, you know, it's not that hard. Anything that supports a wholesome mind, a mind of ease, a mind of well-being, you know, is good for us. Any kind of emotional state, mind state that sabotages that or disturbs that is not good for us. Right? So the first step is to be aware and to identify. Okay? So that, for many of us, will take some work. I mean, not like tons of work. It just means we got to be present and we got to learn. I mean, we don't want to turn this into a big deal, right? Yeah. Now, the second one is the difficulty of stopping them by doing something. Okay? And this is, again, very important, right? I mean, you know, we can go, I am aware that anger has arisen in me. I can aware I'm really mad at so-and-so. And then we're just going to blithely continue on nurturing, cultivating that anger, you know, letting it grow, you see. So, you know, just being aware doesn't solve the problem. It's the beginning of the solution. Is that clear? You know, so because a lot of people can be aware that they're in a negative mind state and then be very at ease with it. And then, you know, you let the fuel, some kind of aggression, some kind of, yeah, I'm really angry at that person. I'm just going to let them have it. Right? You might say, well, there's good self-awareness there. You know, they're able to identify and label that they're angry and, you know, all right. But then they acted in a way that was unskillful, perhaps, or perhaps not. Maybe it was needed. But if generally you find that whatever your brand of afflictive, disturbing emotions is not healthy for you, is not healthy for your mind, is not healthy for your well-being, is not healthy for your relationships, how you show up in the world, you know, if that is your take, I'm going to say, on these afflictive emotions, then you want to what? You want to change them, right? You want to change them. And so this understanding that I want to do, when they arise, I want to be aware, I want to label, but I want to correct. How soon do I want to correct? As soon as possible. Why? What happens when we don't correct as soon as possible? They get stronger, right? Have you noticed that? You could start out with a little bit of irritation, but if you nurture it, it can flame up. You can start out with a little bit of worry, a little bit of anxiety, but if you're not careful, you could really kind of just ramp it up. Right, you could start out with a little bit of hurt, a little bit of sadness, but if you're not careful, you can just ramp it up and it becomes, you know, full-blown sadness or despair. Is that clear? Right? So all emotions, you know, afflictive emotions and good emotions, but why am I focusing on the afflictive? Even though Buddhism mostly talks about how to cultivate wholesome emotions, but it is the the three difficult points are not, you know, happiness and joy, right? You know, that's not, does anybody find that difficult? Right. That's not difficult. So we got to be aware there's a reason that they call this difficult. Okay. So again, we're not going to go into that today, but it is important. What they're saying is once we've made that first step, that we have a clear strategy plan of when this irritation, anger, fear, anxiety, sadness, whatever, envy, jealousy, you know, arises, we have a plan, a strategy, how we're going to stop it, how we're going to transform it, how we're going to do something else immediately, how we're going to correct it. You know, there are many strategies, okay? There are many strategies in Buddhism, many, many types of practices, but as well as in kind of modern, you know, American psychology, right? How to deal with an afflictive emotion, right? An afflictive mind state when it arises. But the important thing is that we are ready. There's another slogan that says, don't let yourself be ambushed. What does that mean? That means this, right? Okay. It means if we are not careful, we are continually ambushed by our conditioning, right? As if I can't believe it that I did this again. You see, right? Like, you know, we're in shock because we're ambushed. I mean, it's only happened 1,000 times in the past, 100 times in the past, you know, 50 times in the past, right? And yet we act as if we just got, you know, this is like, where did this come from? We got ambushed. That's why, you know, in the military, they have somebody up, the point person, right, going out there, scouting the terrain, right? Why is that? So we don't get ambushed. Right? Our mindfulness, our awareness, our knowing ourselves, our knowing other people, our knowing situations, is our capacity to always kind of be on the lookout for those afflictive emotions and those situations that trigger them. Is that clear? It's, again, not that difficult. It just means self-aware. So again, the second difficult point that we have to develop a capacity in is our capacity to, when it arises, that we do something. We correct. Is that clear? And we'll talk about it in a minute. And the third one is, it is difficult to be decisive that we want to, you know, eliminate them, remediate them over time. This is very important because we often, our approach to the afflictive aspects of ourself is often episodic, you see. We go from episode to episode, and we deal with it in life episode and then another life episode. So we may have a strategy, right? And we're doing our best to implement it episode to episode, life situation to life situation. And you may wonder why it is, you know, 5, 10, 15, or 1, 2, 3, 15, 20 years, you know, stuff still coming up. Well, because we have never made the commitment that I want to eliminate this from my mind. Now, for many people, that sounds unbelievable. Because we truly believe that our conditioning, positively and negatively, is somehow something really very solid and real, and this is who I am, right? I mean, I guess that sums it all up, right? We say, well, this is who I am. Has anybody ever said that to themselves in relationship to their stuff? Well, this is who I am. Or how many times have people said to you when you've kind of raised some issues with them, their response to you is, well, this is who I am. If you want to take a moment just to reflect on that for a moment, in terms of yourself and other people, we realize, but see, what's behind that is this strong belief that, you know, that somehow I am a permanent, solid thing over time, you see, and this is who I am. But it's not true. Nobody was, you know, you weren't born that way. Is that clear? You were not born that way. Right? You know, all our stuff has been developed. You know, we come into this world with a, you know, we have certain tendencies and like that, and depending on how they're nurtured or not nurtured, positive and negative, develop or don't develop. But yet, overall, they are simply, in Buddhist psychology, they're simply called seeds. We all have the seeds. We have wholesome seeds and unwholesome seeds, right? We have positive seeds, we have negative seed. And depending on our life situation, our life conditioning, in Buddhism we call that causes and conditions, certain seeds developed. Certain seeds didn't develop. Is that clear? And if they're strong, they are only strong because in the course of your life, those seeds have been strongly nurtured by causes and conditions. And if there and if there's certain kinds of wholesome emotions that are missing, it's only because they weren't nurtured by your causes and conditions of your life. And that's the truth. You know, we all have been born into a body, we all been born into a family, we all were born into a neighborhood, we were all born into a culture, we all went to school, and we were constantly, right? Being, our seeds were being nurtured positively and negatively, right? Take a moment to reflect on that. That's all that's happened. That is what has led us to being who we are today. We were not born this way. I mean, we sort of might have had certain general propensities, but in terms of afflictive emotions, we are where we are today because we have cultivated them. First, they were cultivated in us unconsciously by others in situations, but over time, we did it ourselves. Right? I mean, can you see that? That's all. And that is the freedom, because if you believe, you know, this is the way I was born, or this is the way I was raised, and so this is how I have to be, this is not true. The problem is, not understanding what I just said earlier, we have continued to identify with these afflictive mind states and to nurture them ourselves. Why? Because we think this is me. But what this teaching and what Buddhist psychology gives us is the sense that that's not true. It is true that how we show up and how we feel right now is the product of causes and conditions from our past. That is true. But if we begin to practice, right? If we become more self-aware, if we can really begin to label and name these afflictive emotions and mind states as unhealthy, as disturbing, as something that I really don't want to continue to experience for the rest of my life, then we begin to practice, right? We begin to develop a strategy. So when they arise, which they will arise, why? Because they've arisen endless times before. They will continue to arise, right? But when they arise, if our response to them is different, they will weaken. And over time, they will weaken and weaken and weaken and weaken. As well as every time, you know, they arise, we correct, which means we do something different, then we are strengthening a whole nother repertoire of, you know, emotions, feelings, responses. Is that clear? It's that simple. Or is it? you know, it is difficult, he says. He calls these the three difficult points. But it is true. This is the basis of Buddhist psychology. There is nothing permanent anywhere. Everything is just a product of causes and conditions, whether it's this book, this chair, the climate, you know, who we are, our bodies, our thoughts, our feelings. It's just a product of causes and conditions, right? And those causes and conditions only tell us how we as individuals, we as a culture, we as a world, we as an ecosystem got to where we are today, right? Now, what we do going forward, that's the freedom. Whatever problem we're looking at within ourselves, within the world, within the climate, within politics, you know, why is it the way it is? Because of causes and conditions. That has brought us as individuals, us as a people, us as a world, to where we are today. Is that true? Yeah. Right? That's all. The question is, what do I want to do today? There's our freedom. Do we want to continue the way we've always done it? As a people, as a world, as a culture, you know, as a person, as a relationship, you know, wherever it is? Or do I want to begin to do it differently? So, any discussion on the three difficult points? Any questions or anything, concerns, anything not clear? And then if not, we'll move on to some other points. Again, you know, that you can find all these. You probably find them on the web. I mean, they're, but just for now, are there anything not clear? Yes, yes. Well, that's another Dharma talk. But you know, just give me an example. So, how do we correct what? Okay. Yeah, so there's a whole repertoire, right? I mean, that's one thing, you know, do something different. Okay. Oh, they won't. Okay. So somebody's asking me, yeah, sounds great correcting them. What does that actually mean? I'm just repeating it for the video. For example, what could one do? How could one correct something that has arisen that one doesn't want to indulge? What could one do? We could pause. Right? I mean, simple. I'm going to keep my mouth shut. That's, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't know what to say yet. I don't know how to deal with it yet, but I know one thing. If I open my mouth, it's not going to be good. Right? I mean, that's a very simple thing. Pause, stop. Okay? You know? Yeah. I'm just not going. You know what I mean? So what's another corrective action we could take? It's simple. We replace it with something else. Right? We do something else. Something that is more wholesome, something that is more understanding, right? Right? Somebody cuts you off in traffic and your first response is to go down that rabbit hole of anger, and you might say to yourself instead, well, wish him well. Hey, poor guy's in a hurry, poor woman, she's in a hurry, she's got to get somewhere. You know, wish them well. Right? What's another thing you could do? Take a different perspective. You could remind yourself, have I ever cut anybody off in my history of driving? Would I have liked the other person to, engage me in road rage at that moment? Probably not. Sometimes to remind ourselves that we are less than perfect, that we have perhaps indulged in the same behavior activity that we are so upset by somebody else, right? Sometimes just to do the opposite, right? Right? We're focusing, has anybody ever been angry at anybody? Has anybody ever been angry at somebody that you usually have a positive relationship? You might even be in a close relationship with them. Okay? Has anybody ever gotten angry? Now, what do you notice what happens when you're angry, how you think about that person? Yeah, we all know this. What does our mind do? What does it begin to attend to? All the worst parts, right? And not only do we start creating the litany of all the worst parts, we remember every negative thing they've ever done, right? Is that clear? We all laugh because, yeah, this crazy mind of ours just does it, right? Right? Can you see? So that's, how could you correct that? Force yourself to go, well, let me think of something positive they've ever done to me, for me. You know, do they have any positive qualities? You see, it's like you force your mind to go in a different direction. I mean, there are many ways, but I mean, we can't have 25 strategies. We got to pick a couple that work for us, that we're committed to. And then we work them. Because, you know, in that moment, the difficulty is our energy is wanting to let them have it, right? Our energy is to want to bring up a litany of every negative thing they've ever done for us. Of course, we think we're perfect at that moment, which is another way to go. You know, it's like, let me reflect, do I have any shortcomings? I mean, that may be unbelievable for some people in this room, but, you know, we do have shortcomings. We have acted less than nobly with other people. And we might have done the same exact things to other people that now someone is doing to us, right? And when we have done this to other people, ideally, how would we have liked them to respond to us? Compassionately, with some degree of understanding, to hear us, patience. Is that not true, right? When we are less than perfect, we would like the world and the people in it to respond to us in a noble, positive way. Well, perhaps we could do the same for this person, right? So, again, this is not that difficult. The difficult thing is to want to do it, right? That's a difficult thing, to want to do it. If we really want to do it, there's a better chance that we'll remember to do it. How do you want to do it? Especially over time. It's that third thing, you know, that decisive commitment, aspiration. This is the way I want to begin to show up in the world. Right? This is how I want to show up in this relationship. Any kind of relationship, family relation, intimate relationship, work relationship. Neighbors, you know, it's like, you know, we have to be very conscious about this if we want to change. I mean, does that give a little? Yeah. So again, you know, there's lots, you know, there are many different methodologies, but the important thing is, you know, to find one that works for you, you know, and, you know, you can have a couple because situations are different, but you kind of need your go-to. Yeah, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. I mean, that's the best one for starters, right? I'm just not going to say anything. I'm not going to act out, right? Any other questions? Yes.
I have a... But question.
A what?
But question.
A but.
Yes.
There's always one in the crowd. Yeah.
We stopped speaking. The difficulty I find is stop thinking. Because I may stop saying something outwardly, but then how do I stop it from being inside. And I know there's decisiveness, and I understand those, but that's usually the most difficult for me.
Yeah, so I think that's sort of what I was just saying, Mauricio. It's sort of like the reason to keep our mouth closed no matter what. Again, if, no, it doesn't mean that we never talk, you see. I mean, this is not saying, you know, that we don't communicate with people, or we let them know what we feel or think. Do you see what I'm saying? It's not, I'm not saying that. It's saying in that moment, when we know an unwholesome emotion, afflictive mind state has arisen in me, and my capacity in this moment to act wisely, compassionate, you know what I mean, whatever it is, you know, is severely contaminated in this moment, I am suggesting the first thing to do is just not to make a commitment, not to do anything, not to act out. And many of us, we act out with our words and we act out with our actions. You know, I am not going to act out, which then forces us to do just what you said. Okay? Which is what we don't like to do because it is uncomfortable. Is that not true? Everybody enjoy afflictive mind states? No. I mean, even though you'd think we do, we spend so much time cultivating them. But in our more rational moments, we would go, no, I don't enjoy them, right? So that's one of the reasons that we blame, you see, or we discharge, because that puts the onus on somebody else. Right? That's why we love to blame and you know, recount all their negative things and tell them where to go, and you know, because it takes, you know, and like it gives us a focus rather than kind of being aware that, you know, the afflictive, you know, an afflictive mind state has arisen in me. Okay? But, you know, again, so I'm just saying that not saying anything is just like a first response. This is not, no, ideally we would like to be able to respond appropriately, right? With understanding, with compassion, with clarity, with, I mean, I'm suggesting all that, but with the afflictive emotion, we need to know, you know, it's like being drunk. Right? Has anybody ever been drunk or intoxicated? Right? Do you always say wise things? Well, you probably think you are at the time. But I mean, is that clear? Right. You know, it's you know, later there's lots of regret, right? For the things we did or the things we said. Is that true? Everybody know that. Why is this is the same when we have to realize that when we are in these afflictive mind states, in a certain sense, the mind is intoxicated. It's not clear. It's confused. Right. It's seeing my loved one as a demon. Right. All negative characteristics. It's like, right. I mean, is that an intoxicated mind state? Yeah. We're not straight. We're not clear. So that's like the key thing. And then again, as we said, we, you know, each of us, including you, need your strategy. Yeah. So it, yeah, because just to keep it inside and ruminating, again, not acting out is a good first step. At least we're not doing the damage we've done in the past. But you're right. It's still inside us. It's still moving around. It's still damaging me. And it's damaging the relationship. Right, even if it's just internal. Yeah, so we want to turn it around. And again, you know, a simple thing is to just do the opposite. Force yourself to do the opposite. Any other questions? Yes, and then up there. Yeah.
Yeah, my question is for those of us who struggle with mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
Taboo, but.
Right. I don't know what that was, but like, yeah.
Good. Okay. Wow. So my question is, are there chronic negative mind states that people are truly powerless over? And if so, how do we make sense of that in light of like Dharma?
Yeah. Again, you know, that is a controversial, you know, I would never say, right? That it may not seem that way and feel that way and could be that way. But at the same time, I would say everything is a product of causes and conditions. Okay? And everything can be modified. Everything can be remediated. Can it be eliminated? I don't know. You know, I wouldn't say that. But based on, you know, my Dharma experience of 50 years, and I was a mental health person for, I saw all kinds of people with all kinds of significant mental illnesses remediate significantly. Right? We know that. Right? I mean, we know significantly people who are impaired in many ways can remediate their situation. I mean, if you ask me, you know, is that true for everyone? Absolutely, I wouldn't know. You know, I mean, I wouldn't dare to even say that. But, you know, I believe there's lots of wiggle room in this life. And I certainly believe that with a correct understanding of the nature of the mind and with the tools that we have available to us that have been, you know, again, the difference between, and again, I'm not like saying Buddhism has everything, but I mean, it's over 2,600 years old. I mean, it has, and those 2,600 years, it has been working with the suffering of human beings. That's all it's been dealing with and helping them transform and heal, right? All kinds of cultures, all kinds of situations, all kinds of people, all kinds of historical, you know, eras. You know, that should give us a certain level of confidence, right? That these things work. You know, how much will they work for you? If I'm just, because I would say it's a personal question, I would say you'll find out, right? But you'll never find out if you don't work it, right? And you see, that is the problem with the kind of medicalization and the of emotional disorders these days, you know, is I think it unfortunately gives many people the belief that there's really nothing I can do about this, and I don't believe that. I mean, I've seen it. You know, people who have significant, you know, bipolar, you know, all these kinds of things. You know, it doesn't mean it will be eliminated, but it can certainly change the unfolding within the mind and the body significantly. Right? And I'm not saying that, you know, the, you know, medications and other things, you know, may not be beneficial. But again, these are, as you said, diseases of a mind. And they can change. I assure you of that. Okay? I mean, is that? Any other? Yeah, yes, up there.
Josephine writes, I've learned some things to do with active situations, pause, etc. But what do I do with negative, overwhelming fear, constant thoughts about the future, especially at night? I'm not acting out. I'm just making myself miserable.
Well, I call that acting out, but but in that case, we're the victim of our acting out. Again, you know, this is our problem, and this is, you know, in a certain way it relates to what you were saying. And this is the problem, this is the difficulty for us as Americans. We want the quick fix. Right? And we have a pharmaceutical industry that is getting more and more sophisticated in delivering the quick fixes. Is that clear? And so we are used to that. Many, many people, we demand that. The problem is this dharma that we are talking about is not oriented toward quick fixes, right? It is oriented toward understanding the root of the problem, right? The cause of our sufferings, the cause of our delusions, the cause of our afflictions, understanding them and transforming them over time, right? So, our Western psychological, go to a good cognitive behavioral therapist, and they will give you techniques how to deal with your anxiety in the middle of the night or take some medication, right? But I assure you, without even knowing the situation, that full-blown anxiety that occurs in the middle of the night has its roots in the ongoing mind of that person, right? You know, many of our mind states, most afflictive ones, the way I see it, if you can imagine, like when they're hot, it's like the fire's out. You know, they're on fire. The fire has come up. But think about, coals, right? Think about embers that are covered with ash. Right? If you've ever gone camping or a coal fire, you know what I'm saying? They're not flaming up, are they? Right? But they're still there. Right? How do we know they're still there? Because if you blow on them or you throw a little fuel on them, what happens? Okay? So, these flare-ups of anger, these flare-ups of anxieties, these flare-ups of sadness and despair, they're not just coming out of nowhere. Many of us throughout the day, sort of at a kind of a background low hum, are maintaining these, many people, they go, oh, I'm not an angry person. I mean, I rarely get angry. Oh, but I am irritated a lot during, just as I go through my day. I mean, this one pisses me off, you know what I mean? But it's like low level. You see what I'm saying? You see? It's low level. No, those are the coals, right? You're at risk, right? You just may, I worry a little bit about this and that, but watch your mind. You may be surprised. These mind states may be more chronic, right? During the day, low level, right? And we only notice them when they flare up. And when they flare up, we think they're coming out of nowhere. Mm-mm. Nothing comes out of, in Buddhism, we say everything is cause and effect. Nothing comes out of nothing. Everything arises out of prior causes, or it couldn't come out. Where would it come from? Like when people say, somebody and so-and-so made me angry. No, nobody made you angry. They don't have the power to kind of climb into your mind and turn the valves. I'm going to get in there and turn on the anger valve. We talk that way, don't we? Nobody can make us angry. Anger arises within our own mind. Fear arises in our own mind. Sadness, despair arises in our own mind. Is that true? See how empowering that is. I mean, we say all the time, I'm just a normal person. We talk like that. Don't all normal people, have these kinds of reactions? No. You do. Right? You see? And that's where we got to take responsibility going, it's so empowering to go, these mind states are arising within me. Why? Because at some level, I am maintaining them and nurturing them. Do you see how freeing that is? But that's a big shift for many of us. It's not like it's just going to happen, right? But it's a shift. It's like all of a sudden we realize, all mind states are rising within my own mind. And I have the freedom to change if I want to, if I believe I can. But if I don't believe I can, I assure you, you will not change. Right? I mean, it's really that simple. You know, all I can say to you is, you know, the technology's there. It's been tested for 2,600 years. And that's just Buddhism. And I only say that because that's the system that I've been studying for all these years. But there, hopefully there are lots of spiritual systems, psychological, I don't know what, you know, which work. Right? Any other questions? I mean, this is important. I think we're down at the kind of the nub of it. Yes. Yeah, so I think whenever we're assessing our spiritual progress, we have to look back. You know, unfortunately, many people look forward to some imagined place where they think they're supposed to be, which is just imagined. That's a fantasy. Okay, so I think if we want to assess whatever kind of spiritual development we have undertaken, or we need to go, you know, where was I a year ago? Where was I 3 years ago? Where was I 5 years ago? Right? And hopefully we will see there is a change. You know, one of the best ways to assess is, of course, you know, go home to family for Thanksgiving. That's a, you know. I mean, what I, no, hopefully everybody has a nice family and you enjoy this. But what I mean is that, you know, one way to assess ourselves, and this happens, I hear this all the time from people, is, you know, when you're in situations that you've had in the past, right? And you see, I am responding differently, right? You know, in the past, I would have obsessed about this for at least 3 weeks, right? Now I'm only obsessing about it for 1 week. You see what I'm saying? You might go, oh, I'm really getting nowhere. But no, you're significantly improved. It doesn't mean you don't want to keep working it. You see what I'm saying? But, you know, yeah. So our assessment of our change has always got to be based on where we started from, where we were. Now, if one assesses and goes, wow, I am as, you know, whatever I was today as I was back then I would look at that. Doesn't mean there's something wrong, but there's something wrong about the approach. Either, you know, I'm not really serious about it, I'm just, you know, pretending that I'm going through the motions, but I'm really not practicing. I'm reading the books, I'm talking the talk, I'm sitting down to meditate, but I'm really just, you know, passing time. Well, you know, I mean, that could be. You see, I think we need to be able to be self-assessing in that way and go, am I really committed to changing? You know, am I serious about this? Do I want to be a less angry person? Do I want to be a more patient person? Do I want to be a more loving person? Do I want to be a less judgmental person? Or am I just saying it, but I'm not working it? Because just by saying it, we cannot become it, right? I mean, it doesn't work that way, does it? I mean, think about anything you want to be in this life. Don't you have to work it and practice and, right? Any skill, any competency, any, I mean, this is not a far out thought. Well, this is the same thing. And how much more important in our own transformation, our own healing, right? That we take it seriously and we, you know, and we're self-aware and we troubleshoot and we, you know, we work it. When we work it, we will see results. How could we not? Nothing is fixed in this world, internally or externally. Are there not people who come out of horrible conditions and really make something of their life? Anybody ever know anybody like that? There may be people sitting in this room like that. I mean, how'd you do it if everything was fixed? if who you were when you were 5 or 7 is who you're going to be for the rest of your life. I mean, is anybody different than they were at 7? 14? How about picking in teenage years? Teenagers are in their own program today, so we can we can talk about them. I mean, you know, I mean, how would you like to have stayed 15 for your whole life? Right? You see, that shows you we change. So for those of you who have never been before, every 2 weeks we have a children's program, and then they come in and join us. And there's just some quick sharing of what they did, and then we sing a song with them. Quite delightful. So thank you, everyone, and I will continue this next week.